AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
The soy-pocalypse has cooled, but there's still a lot to talk about today. Fed Chair Powell's job is under scrutiny. USDA is short-staffed, rushing a vote on infrastructure, and, oh yeah, wasn't there supposed to be something out on the RFS like a month ago? Live from a Monster Cookie Friday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk This Morning. It's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Mark Recker. Later, as part of our College Roadshow, the Dean of Agriculture at Purdue University, Karen Plout. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, filling in for the now likely road-weary Chip Flory. Welcome to AgriTalk This Morning, everyone. Your pal Davis Michelson here behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. Yeah. The chip shortage has finally hit AgriTalk. I guess it was bound to happen. I mean, you know, it takes this stuff a little while to get to the Midwest, but man, when it does, we feel the effects. Chip is out today, but he'll be back on Monday. He'll be back. So just a temporary shortage, apparently, on the chips here. It's a Monster Cookie Friday. It's a Monster Cookie Friday. I'm here. We're going to have the free-for-all this morning. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, the news just marches on. Last week, we could barely fit it all in. This week, I mean, we're talking Fed, we're talking USDA, short of workers. I mean, Vilsack is talking thousands of workers that he had, at least, when he was working for President Obama that just aren't there anymore. That's got to make a guy's job tough. The president had a town hall on CNN. They want to rush the infrastructure bills, both segments of the infrastructure bills. The president's headed to Europe. He wants to get that wrapped up, or at least a voice vote, before he travels to Europe. And what the heck with the RFS, the renewable fuel standard? We still haven't heard anything. I'm sure Wiesmeyer will have some insights on at least where we are in that process. If, when, could we expect to hear something anytime soon or anytime? I don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out together, planet Earth. Thank you so much for tuning in. Before we get to the free-for-all, let me just run down some news for you. USDA's Cattle on Feed report out at 2 p.m. Central Time today. It's expected to show October 1 feedlot inventories down fractionally from a year ago, but the number of cattle placed into feedlots in September is expected to be up. Cold storage will also be released at 2 p.m. Central this afternoon. Beef and pork stocks usually build during September. The House Agriculture Committee Thursday approved bipartisan legislation to establish a library for cattle contracts at USDA's Ag Marketing Service, which backers say will help improve price transparency for the cattle market. I'd also like to talk to Jim about that, see what his thoughts are on that measure. White House officials are urging Democratic congressional leadership to move toward a House floor vote next week on both the bipartisan infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better reconciliation package. Most observers think the timeline, while not impossible, is improbable. And I think improbable is probably the weightier description there, more apt, if you will. It's been a tangled mess trying to get this through. And I think just sort of putting a deadline on it, saying, well, we got to have it done by the end of next week, or at least a floor vote on it. I don't know if that's going to help. I really don't think so. Chief executives at CSX and Union Pacific say a lack of truck drivers, equipment, and warehouse workers are causing congestion in their yards, forcing the railroad operators to turn down some business during a time of high demand for shipping companies. The railroads are also facing issues within their own operations, from damaged bridges to difficulty hiring conductors that they say are hampering them from transporting more goods. We've been talking about this supply situation, the transport constraints, I guess you would call it. We've got all these container ships stuck at the ports. They're having difficulty getting them all unloaded in a timely fashion. And now, once they even do, you've got executives at CSX, Union Pacific, saying truck drivers are a problem, equipment's a problem, warehouse workers are a problem, and the physical infrastructure, damaged bridges are even a problem, keeping them from transporting more goods. This, speaking of tangled messes, this is another one. We'll talk more about it later on in the show. Shortages of dishwashers and refrigerators are likely to stretch well into next year, Whirlpool's chief executive officer said, as supply chain problems constrain production and consumer demand remains strong. The Benton Harbor, Michigan-based company has ramped up appliance production, but delays have grown as waits for components and other snags lead to back orders of around 6 weeks for the average appliance, said Whirlpool CEO Mark Bitzer. You remember back in the old days, and maybe, I don't know if some folks still have these, the old roller thing, you'd sort of wash, I remember, well, it was my neighbor lady, but she would wash the clothes in the tub with the borax and everything, and then run them through the little strainer thing, and in the summertime, hang them out on the line, or in the wintertime, they had those wooden drying racks with the dowels. We may find ourselves going back to that if we can't get wash machines. President Biden said he would consider deploying the National Guard to assist with supply chain bottlenecks that have led to shortages and high consumer costs. Gold and silver markets have finally awakened to the fact global inflation is rising and probably will not be just transitory, according to market analyst Jim Wyckoff. Gold prices have been trending higher since late September. Silver prices this week hit a six-week high. History shows hard assets like precious metals become more in favor as an inflation hedge when consumer and producer prices are rising. And I'm starting to hear that word transitory again. There was a transitory verbiage drought for a while, and now it's in the negative. Won't be just transitory in reference to inflation. Time will tell. President Biden admitted during a town hall Thursday night that he has no immediate solution to the problem of spiking gas prices and suggested that Americans would not start seeing relief at the pump until next year. According to AAA, the national average price of a gallon of regular gasoline had reached $3.36 on Thursday, up 4 cents from the average on Monday. The organization noted that no state had an average gas price lower than $3 per gallon. The White House scrambled to reaffirm the status quo after Biden said that America would defend Taiwan were mainland China to attack. America's longstanding position is merely to aid Taiwan's self-defense while keeping its military commitments vague. This is the second time since August that Biden's remarks had to be walked back. China has become increasingly aggressive toward the island, which it considers its own. In other China news, the country is pushing coal miners to maximize output and hiking imports in an attempt to rebuild stockpiles before the winter heating season amid the country's energy crunch. Meanwhile, a group of 43 countries denounced China's human rights record at the United Nations yesterday, criticizing Beijing for its detainment of Uyghurs in the western region of Xinjiang. Important to note that China denies that there are any human rights violations going on there with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. And on the energy, we've got a report here that China has purchased two cargoes of diesel fuel, which is a rare move for them and just kind of another indicator that they're having quite the energy crunch over in China. And finally, USDA is faced with agency staffing challenges, including several of President Joe Biden's undersecretary nominees waiting for Senate confirmation. Secretary Vilsack, who previously served in the same role for nearly 8 years under President Barack Obama, said his department is operating with 3,000 to 4,000 fewer employees than when he last filled the post. Lots to talk about today on AgriTalk. Stick around for the free-for-all. It's your pal, Davis Michelson. Hang on. AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you are there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
We've got a frost overnight here in central Iowa. Feels significant. here on the 22nd of October. Hope you're all doing well. Harvest marches on, where not already complete. Hope you're doing well out there. Just real quick, I got to preach safety just a little bit. Don't stick your hand in there. I say it every year. Don't stick your hand in there. Not even just real quick. Be safe, everyone. We need you whole. We need you healthy. We appreciate you so much. Big Apple Joe says, say it every day. I don't know, Joe. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see what tomorrow brings, right? Davis Michelson here on AgriTalk. We've got the free-for-all, Recker, Haney, and Wiesmeyer. I want to start with Mark Recker. Mark, welcome to the show this morning. How you doing, buddy? It's good to talk to you.
Well, good morning, Davis, and it's been a while, but it's good to be back on for a show, too. We've progressed on some harvest significantly here in northeast Iowa, and like you said, had our first hard frost last night.
Yeah. Does that change anything for you? You know, I woke up this morning, and Haney and I were talking. I'll bring him in here in a second, but I was groggy this morning, and I think the frost might have had something to do with that. Is that a thing? What's your farmer wisdom say about that?
I don't know if it was a frost, perhaps something else you did last night that may have contributed to that, Davis.
It was a very well-behaved Thursday night. No, it was all G-rated.
I don't know what your lifestyle is, but that could have been too. But as far as frost goes, on my front, it should help. We fought these green stem beans for harvesting for all season, it seems like. Most farmers complaining about it, so that'll take care of them. And now we get a couple days to harvest. It's pretty damp this morning, so we won't start till this afternoon. But it looks like we have another rest break coming, because Sunday, a long rain system comes through that's going to keep us out of the field for an extended period of time.
Yep, I saw that. So put a percentage on it. How close are you? How close are you to done?
So I think I'm sitting at about 80% done. I got a few acres of beans left to get to. And then when we couldn't do beans, we jumped into corn, so knocked some of that out too. And so, yeah, 80%. And I know most guys in my immediate neighborhood, it looks like, finished up beans when we had the chance here this week. And there's still some acres around, of course. And we may have to wait for an Indian summer or something to get at those if we can't get them tomorrow.
Is that pretty much in line with the neighbors, or are you way ahead or way behind comparatively in the neighborhood?
Oh, pretty much in line, I would say. You know, there's a fair amount of corn out yet, but not too far from me. We had a significant windstorm go through back in late August. That there's a lot of down corn that farmers have been working on, and so that obviously makes the season take longer for some. So there's still quite a few corn acres yet to be started around here.
Sean Haney, I have here in my notes that you are still trapped behind enemy lines in the great Southland of North Dakota. Sean, how are you doing, buddy? Good morning.
Great to be here, Davis. Yeah, I'm still down in Bismarck, North Dakota. I've been here for quite a long stretch, about 4 weeks, taking care of my son who had surgery on his shoulder. So he's going to school down here, and I'm headed home next week. I think I'm going back to the land of the north next week, just in time for winter.
I was going to say, now, they probably had a good hard frost up there like a month ago, didn't they? What's the timetable on that where you're from?
Well, the average frost date, I believe, for where I am in southern Alberta is about like September 10th. It's been a pretty beautiful fall, to be honest with you, which it has across most of the northern U.S. But it's just starting to turn now, where no snow on the ground yet at all. Okay. But you can feel the cold. The late fall is in the air.
Jim Wiesmeyer has fallen the air out in D.C. as well. Are you strolling around the promenades with the leaves and all that sort of stuff? I have no idea what it's like in D.C.
I stroll. It's beautiful here today, but I was in Seattle, Washington, woke city, woke state, but I really loved their marketplace in Seattle, and it was beautiful weather when I was there.
Jim, I want to start with you on the infrastructure package. They've just sort of put this weird kind of soft deadline for a soft approval by the end of next week. Biden is traveling to Europe. Does he want to go there waving the flag that, hey, we're actually getting something done over here? Is that the idea?
Absolutely. And at least a scheduled vote in the House next week on both, as you said in the news wrap-up, unlikely, but not impossible. So we're going to see. Pelosi's on board to try to get to at least a House vote on both of them.
And Mark, go ahead,
Davis,
Sean.
I was just going to say, I not just go to COP26 in Europe with, you know, having accomplished something, but having accomplished something domestically as it pertains to climate issues, right? So that he can can go there and talk to the UN Climate Change Conference about some of the things that the U.S. is doing. But he's got about two, I think it's two short weeks to get it done.
But this isn't the Green New Deal, though, Sean. I mean, come on. It's an infrastructure package. That's all it is, right?
Well, you could call it with whatever you want, and everybody may have a different opinion on that. But he's going to want to go to, I believe the meeting's in Scotland. He's going to want to go to Scotland, and he's going to want to do some bragging.
Mark, your eyebrows are raised, even though that they've narrowed the price tag down to $1.9 trillion on the Build Back Better plan, the human infrastructure plan. But with so much opposition to the corporate tax increases, where do you reckon they make up that funding? I mean, do you have any thoughts?
So, well, first of all, I think Sean's exactly right. They need to take something out of this with regard to climate. That's, you know, in large part what this is about. And I think last time I was on over a month ago when Joe Manchin came out and said he was against this number, this $3.5 trillion, that I thought this was a first salvo in the negotiation. And it goes on. The negotiation goes on. But the climate piece of this is something that Joe Manchin is pushing back against pretty hard from a West Virginia standpoint. So it'll be interesting what they actually get done on that piece of it. I think they're getting closer on the number. I think that $1.9 trillion is something that they must feel like if they're going to announce a potential vote, they must be getting comfortable that Sinema and Manchin are getting to the point where they're getting comfortable with that number and what's included in the package and getting the details. But as far as how to pay for it now, because they've taken away the corporate tax part of it, the concern is, so what do they go after now if they want to prove a pay for?
Right.
Do they, you know, we thought as farmers were hoping the estate tax is safe, that that's settled, we're not going to lose stepped up basis. And I still think that is. But they didn't want to get after people under $400,000. Are they going to have to break that promise? So where is this funding going to come from to pay for this, even with a $1.9 trillion over 10 years?
Jim, can I put that question on your plate?
Oh, yeah. They'll find all sorts of ways. And Sinema has already indicated inside to Washington officials at the White House that she's agreed to provision in each of Biden's four proposed revenue categories, international, domestic, corporate, high net worth individuals, and tax enforcement. So they can get a chunk of change that way. On the climate change front, Biden still wants to maintain that $150 billion for a clean electricity performance program, even though Manchin's against it. But on television last night at the town hall, he said Manchin is open to my convincing him that I can use that package to increase environmental progress. So talks are continuing.
This, as inflation continues to rise, Sean Haney, you use the word transitory in the negative in reference to inflation. The Bank of Canada looks like they're thinking about some rate increases.
Yeah, Scotiabank was out yesterday with some pretty concerning words. They're talking about 8 increases between now and the end of 2023 in Canada.
8.
So that's at least 200 basis points. That'll grab your attention. You know, there's all this focus on the fact that people believe that inflation is transitory because the consumer has increased their savings during the pandemic, and they're gonna eventually spend it. It looks like some of those savings are gonna be going to debt service, if you ask me. I think inflation is, I think there's a lot more skeptics growing here on what this idea that inflation is transitory.
The price of gas, as you said, every 10 cent increase in the price of gas means $1.3 billion of less disposable income. So, you know, that's cutting into that disposable income.
Mark, your thought quickly.
Yeah, so I think the phrase I've heard being used now is transitory but sticky. So, and I think the supply chain disruption has really been underestimated, right? I think that the kind of, right, and how long it takes to work through this, because we all know consumers have a lot more money to spend, not going toward services, going toward the hard products to demand now, and it's just going to take time to work through that. I'm not convinced it's long-term inflation myself, but I just think it's going to take longer to work through.
Well, and as you're talking about stickiness, there are availability concerns for stuff that farmers really need really bad for next year's crop.
There is. And the talk in the neighborhood and what farmers are kind of getting concerned about now as we work through harvest and we look toward next year is we're hearing the availability of certain herbicides is going to be very, very much an issue. And even retailers you talk to, they're not getting stocks in of glyphosate and other products perhaps that they thought they were going to get, that they were expecting earlier in September and still haven't got it. So something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Mark Recker, Sean Haney, Jim Wiesmeyer, and your pal Davis Michelson. We're free for allin' on a Friday. We're glad to have you along. Stay tuned through these words to AgriTalk. We'll have more in a moment.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. The beaners gave us a scare yesterday, down just 4 or 5 cents today.
Yeah, you know, we tried to work higher earlier on in the session, Davis, but soy oil's weakened, and that's pulled soybeans down and trading, like you said, about a nickel lower here mid-morning. But, you know, I think really the story in the grain and soy complex so far this morning has been wheat, just an explosive move higher. Led initially by spring wheat futures. We saw the December contract there blow through $10 and move to its highest level since 2012. And the HRW contracts in that market has followed and now trading basically in the front end of that market, penny for penny higher with the spring wheat so far this morning. So big move up in the wheat markets today.
Corn following that wheat market move up 3-4 cents.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that's the bulk of the support. We saw corn trade higher overnight and maintain its firmer tone here through mid-morning. But you know, it's wheat that's providing the fireworks there, the support there in the corn market.
Cattle on feed and cold storage reports out later on today, 2 p.m. Central Time. Your thoughts?
Well, just a little bit of profit-taking going on in the live cattle, so they're weakening just a bit ahead of that report. And that's the market that pays closest attention, obviously, to the cattle on feed. Feeder cattle, they're under moderate pressure, heavy pressure in the back end of the market on that strength that we talked about in corn. And then the hog market, you know, we had a disastrous close yesterday, showed some follow-through initially this morning. And now it's trying to work a little bit higher, but boy, even the corrected buyer interest is just very limited despite the heavy losses earlier this week.
Brian, thanks for your thoughts on the markets. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number two diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number two. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Ding. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Your pal Davis Michelson here. I've got Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Recker this morning on the free-for-all. Jim, take us over to the Fed now. I was talking to Todd Bubba Horowitz earlier this week. He feels like Powell needs to go and they need somebody softer on monetary policy in order to get what they want to have done for the Biden administration. But there's a controversy sort of creeping up about trading among the Fed members.
Yes, including Fed Chair Powell, who sold between $1 million and $5 million of stocks on October 1st, 2020. It just happened to be before a sharp one-day drop in the U.S. market. Now, he didn't do, apparently, anything unethical within the guidelines, but, you know, those guidelines are going to change now. Where's the ethics office at the Federal Reserve? Mm-hmm. I don't think you can be much softer than the Fed is now, but I just think the swamp in Washington has gone into the Federal Reserve, and they ought to clean shop, including Kyle.
Yeah, they may not have broke rules. I'm no expert on what the guidelines are. There's sort of a bit of a smell test here that feels like it's sort of been broken, and you sort of think like, really, they can do that? It's funny, you know, Trump spent all that time trying to get rid of Powell, and it may be actually Biden that does the deed and goes in a different direction.
Well, and yeah, when we're go on, Mark.
Davis. Yeah, well, I'll just throw in here, you know, it's how is it that there aren't rules for this, that there aren't clear, mm-hmm. specific guidelines? You know, we went through this back at the beginning of COVID, I believe a year ago, January, with the Senate committee that had the inside information on that. And some senators got accused of doing some inside trading or dumping stocks. Mm-hmm. And so how is there no hard red line that this is not acceptable? And if there isn't, there certainly should be.
I Jim, did a lot of research on this last night, and I have the same question. And apparently, yeah. there's and I linked to it. There's a code of conduct at the Fed. They thought that, mm-hmm. with so much privy inside information, that they certainly wouldn't do stuff like this. Well, they did. So that's why you're seeing the tight, you know, more stricter rules now.
Speaking of rules, Jim, where the heck is this RFS stuff? Is it a month ago? Is it even longer than that? When they said, oh, no, it'll be out on Friday. We'll have it for you Monday. We'll have it for you the next day. And still nothing.
Well, you know, maybe before or, you know, November 1. If so, that would mean they wouldn't hit their November 30th deadline to finalize it, because you mm-hmm. know, call for public comments. But cynically, it may be, it may come after the elections. But, you know, we had no mandate in place for 2021, yet we still produce ethanol and biodiesel. So. You know, does it really matter?
Yeah. So you're saying that maybe the free market is kind of driving it after all?
Absolutely. But we want to know what's going to happen. Yes, absolutely. But we want to know the other issues, the reset after 2022. What's the biodiesel, renewable diesel angle? I think that's just as important, if not more important, than carbon-based ethanol.
Sean.
Yeah, Davis. It wouldn't be administration without delaying the RVO release.
Right.
But the important take home here, as always, is it better be 15 billion gallons. You know, that's the important thing. When they release that number, if it's less than 15 billion gallons, that is the statute. The corn farmers are going to be very upset, and rightfully so.
If it's not different from the rumored Reuters story, a month ago or longer, Davis, then you got to question, why wait this long? So I think there must be some changes involved here, which could be a signal for corn-based ethanol here.
What about renewable diesel? How does that figure in? It's been a topic of conversation, at least here, quite a bit. And I know there's been some talk over there in Washington about it. Is it possible that they're saying, well, we've got, you know, ethanol in the form of diesel now, so we can maybe shave off a little bit of the ethanol mandate and put some of that goodwill, that aspirationalism, toward renewable diesel instead? I don't know. Is that just ridiculous?
Well, I was out to a veg oil industry meeting last week in Nashville and spoke at it. And I'm telling you, this is a mega change unfolding, before us, that really the trader participants are looking more at the California CARB program than the Renewable Fuel Standard program. And then you have California wannabe states like Washington and Oregon, boosting their requirements. So you're going to crush for oil now. And I think mm-hmm. you're going to move more. Mm-hmm. Crushing here, it could mean more short-term downturn in U.S. soybean exports, which would be good for our livestock industry. This is a major change going on here that we're crushing for the oil now, for the renewable diesel program. Mm-hmm.
100% agree, Jim. You know, we're seeing major expansion in soybean crush capacity in the U.S., and we're going to see even more. Canada has seen a massive amount of announcements in terms of canola crush capacity, all related to renewable diesel. And it like Jim said, we always talk, how can we diversify away from China? Just such a big market. There's no other China around that could, sort of backfill some of the demand if they back off. And it's looking like, at least from this perspective, it may be in the domestic crush of some of these commodities we used to put on a boat and ship across the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sean, I want to switch gears. Take us to the land up north, the great mighty Northland. What's the employment situation like up there? We hear all kinds of stuff about, well, there aren't enough workers in the U.S. to fill jobs. Could just give us an update on what it looks like in Canada.
Same exact narrative. What needs to happen in terms of government programs is some of these COVID assistant dollars for workers. Is that preventing people from going back to the workforce? Restaurants, the hospitality industry facing some of the shortages and challenges. People are not coming back to work in those industries as well as others. I tried to go out last night, Dave, from a North Dakota perspective, not a Canadian perspective. I went uh-huh. out, tried to go to Olive Garden last night. Walked by the window, half the restaurant is empty. Okay, so I'm like, we're going to get in easy. Walk around to the front, and they say it's going to be a 30-minute wait. They don't have enough staff. There's a lineup outside. Half the restaurant's empty because they can't get enough staff to work in it. It's going to lead to more and more pushing of technology where people order on an iPad. Some high-end restaurants already have this, where there basically is no waiter or waitress. You just order and the kitchen staff delivers the food because they just can't find the staff.
Mark, what's the employment crunch look like in your area?
Very similar. Not be able to find staff for restaurants. We've had some restaurants close. Generally, can't find workers. Everybody's having a hard time finding workers. And I think what we found here, as they study this, that everybody wanted to point the finger at, well, there's too much employment giving out the bonus COVID payments. Well, we've taken those away. In Iowa, we took them away in June. Yep. The federal ones went down in September. And really, there's been very little impact based on taking those away. So that's not the only answer, obviously. There's other things going on. There's people that can't find childcare. There's people that chose a different career. People probably still have some reserves. They didn't spend money during COVID, and so they have those reserves that they have, and they just made a change decision that they're going to change their career. And when we talk about the reconciliation bill, the $1.9 trillion, a part of that is going toward childcare and expanding childcare, which how important would that be to expand childcare availability for people and get them back in the workforce, give them the opportunity to get back in the workforce. I think that's one thing we overlook, that we focus on that amount, but what's money going toward? And there's a lot of people that need childcare. I know people around here that, hey, if they had childcare, they could get back in the workforce on a regular basis.
Okay, we're going to run out of time.
Kendall had an interesting story that said a lot of people started their own businesses, and that could be a major part, reason why as well.
Yep. We're going to run out of time, so I'm going to call lightning round for the rest of the conversation. Jim, Wasserman's election predictions. Go.
The Republicans will win the House by 20-25 seats. They'll take over the Senate 53-47.
Is that with or without the infrastructure package?
It would probably be even more if they don't get the infrastructure package. It would be a death knell for the Democrats, which is why they're going to get something.
Right.
Which party will Senator Manchin be in at that time?
He may be an independent by that time, caucusing with the Democrats.
Sean, your question. Update us on the romance between Canada and China. Where are relations now?
they're ever frosty. It's actually a lot of the news cycle has really dripped lower. Everybody waiting for Canada to make a decision on the Huawei technology infrastructure. So that's kind of the Prime Minister said they would have an announcement soon, but we're still waiting.
Mark Recker, take us to the big story. Inputs, $5 corn in 2021 is not going to be the same as $5 corn in 2022.
It is not. We've eaten through that pretty quickly with the increase and doubling in the cost of fertilizer, et cetera. And it looks like it's headed for even higher highs and chemicals to follow. So, you got to be a really shrewd marketer to make it going next year and really, really hope we get solid yields like we did this year.
Is it going to have any impact on the hardcore rotational farmers?
I don't think so. I think guys like growing corn. There's some issues with that, but there's also issues growing soybeans. So I think guys have the rotation set up for the most part. May shift a few acres, but I really think guys like growing corn.
So you're going to hop back out in the combine right away after we're done here?
Once we get things dried up, yep, that is my hope, to jump in the combine again and then continue on with harvest, because like we talked earlier, I know next week we'll probably be looking for work in the shop to do.
All right. That sounds great. Mark Recker, be safe out there. Thanks for joining us this morning. Sean
great
Haney,
to be on.
I hope you make it back north of the border, buddy, soon.
Thanks a lot, Davis. It was great to be on again.
We appreciate you. Jim Wiesmeyer, thanks as always for your information and your insights, buddy. We appreciate it.
With all the logistics problem, my headline for Christmas is Jingle Bell Block.
Jingle Bell Block. We'll leave it at that. Jim Wiesmeyer, thanks so much. Mark Recker, Sean Haney, and of course, Jim Wiesmeyer. We've got Karen Plout, the Dean of the College of Ag at Purdue, coming up next in our final segment of AgriTalk on this Good Friday morning. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back. AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. And now our College Roadshow turns its attention. The eyes of the planet focus on Purdue University. I've got Glenn W. Sample, Dean of Agriculture at Purdue, Karen Plout. Dean Plout, thank you so much for joining us this morning on AgriTalk. How's everything at Purdue?
Thank you for allowing me to join you. It's great here. We have all our students back, and it's just a lively atmosphere.
For sure. Just sort of before we get into the ag school and what you've got going on, are there differences in wake of the pandemic at how you're doing things there at Purdue? Have you noticed a dramatic difference?
Sure, there are some differences. We do wear masks inside, indoors, but outside, we continue to go on like we used to. I think the spirit at Purdue is really strong right now. Our student numbers are up dramatically, and we're all really excited to have people in classes, and all our classes are in person, and lots of activities going on.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love the sound of that. Talk to me about the ag school itself. What's the status right now? How are things looking at the ag school?
We're doing well. We're according to the QS World Rankings, we're number 7 in the U.S. and number 15 worldwide.
Very nice.
Feel really good about that.
Yeah.
Our student numbers are up, so that's all looking good. And our students are leaders across the university as well as for agriculture. So really pleased with all that they're doing.
One question I guess that I would have, is there a mission for the Ag School? I'm sure you have a mission statement of some kind. What's your mission?
Yeah, so one of the things we talk about now is growing a sustainable future. And by sustainability, we mean sustainability for our students so that they can get the jobs of the future and we prepare them for the future. Sustainability for our research, so we're doing cutting edge research that moves our farmers forward and increases productivity and obviously economic and environmental sustainability. And our extension needs to be sustainable for the future. And that really means helping rural communities and making sure that they can grow and reach new heights. So that's what we talk about as kind of our mission for the future. How do we continue to grow? That's local, global, and global. In our attempts, we work around the world. We're in 70 different countries, but we also work in all 92 counties in Indiana.
So what does that look like as far as the program offerings goes, the typical syllabus? What areas are seeing the most growth in as far as classes and coursework goes?
Well, that's a great question. We continue to have really strong student numbers in both animal science, agronomy, ag and biological engineering. But one of the things we've added to all those curriculums is more of a focus on digital agriculture and data sciences. We know that students need to be able to apply data science to almost any field they go into. So we've really added that to our array of majors with a minor in that area so that students can do that. Also continuing to focus on communications and how important that is for the future. and really helping our students think not only in terms of science, but science communication and the application of data to whatever they're doing in whatever field they're doing.
Dean Plough, do you have a sense here, and maybe I'm just sort of asking you to speculate, well, maybe you've got some data, but are you talking mostly farm kids that wind up in the ag school, or are there some more urban types that show up there with an interest in ag as well?
So it's a mixture of both. We still have a pretty good farm kid population, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But we also are attracting students from other majors and other areas. And one of the things, we have the program called the Data Mine, and it's actually 800 students in a living learning community learning how to use data. And that's in partnership with many of our agricultural companies. There are also other companies, engineering and stuff, but agriculture has been really using that. And what that does is not only bring ag students into the idea of how we use data and how we look at the future, but it also brings students from all these different disciplines who see what we're doing in agriculture, see the opportunity to make an impact around the world and get really excited. So one of our goals is to bring more different people and diverse people into agriculture and actually expand our network. So it's been an exciting opportunity for the college.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Well, the ag industry keeps evolving, and that data is going to become more and more important as we go along. What would you say is the most popular course of study or major within the ag department?
The most popular major is animal science. Okay. And then it's ag econ, probably is second in that. And that's very typical. I mean, and that's where you get that mix of student from basically farm background to a lot of non-farm kids that have had experience with animals and really look at that. But, and many of them are interested in vet school, but mm-hmm. we now talk about Plan A and Plan A. Plan A okay. being vet school and Plan A being all the other things that you can do in agriculture that many of our students, especially that haven't been in agriculture, don't know about. So lots of opportunities for those students in many different areas.
For sure. And then a number of them, I'm sure, go on to postgraduate work to the master's program.
Absolutely. We have a lot of students that go on to either a master's or a PhD, and that's in all our different areas. Actually, our largest master's and PhD program is Ag and Biological Engineering. So that's joint between us and the engineering college, but really focuses on equipment and robotics and some of those areas that are really popular, grain storage, you name it. They get to tinker with toys and build new things, and it's been really exciting.
If there are potential students who are listening, do you want to throw out a shameless plug? What's the website where they can go and learn more about the Purdue College of Ag?
Yeah, they can just type in Purdue Agriculture and they'll come right to our website. But for those students, I will say to them, Purdue is a place you can pursue your passion. No matter what you're interested in, we have a place for you. We want to tailor a program that fits what your needs are and make sure you get out of it what you need and can get the best career possible in the future that you love for your lifetime and that fits your lifestyle.
Outstanding. Glenn W. Sample, Dean of Ag at Purdue. Karen Plough, thank you so much, Dean Plough, for joining us on AgriTalk today. Our College Roadshow will... You bet. Our College Roadshow continues this afternoon. Jason Lusk, Michael Langemeyer, and Jim Mintert, all from Purdue. We'll be right back. Let's see. Actually, we'll be back this afternoon. Tune in at 2:06 Central for more AgriTalk.